Blair Palmer, and welcome to the Punks in Suits podcast. Does work have to be this way? No, it does not. You can make a big splash in the world without sacrificing your soul to do it. Call it existential angst, a midlife crisis, or just the desire to have another throw of the dice. You're ready to rethink this whole work thing and configure a life and a career that really reflects who you are and what you care about. Together, we can do this. Together, we're punks in suits. Hello, and welcome to episode 57 of the Punks in Suits podcast. I am so excited to bring you today's show that I barely slept last night. I will talk about sleepless nights and their relationship to the adventure of change on another show. But suffice to say, I will be talking from personal experiences. For me, the ideas are flowing so fast right now that it is hard to turn them off. I'm sure you've been there at some point. But the reason I'm so excited today is that I've been wanting to share a few concepts with you for a few weeks, and this show is my first opportunity. I've spent the holidays refining a few of these ideas, and frankly, even last night, putting some polish onto those ideas so that they were ready to share with you, which explains why I couldn't sleep very well. But let's start with a story. I'm going to go back to about 1998, and I was a producer for BBC Radio 4. And this was a dream job in many ways. I mean, maybe like you, I was doing a job back then that I'd spent years fantasizing about all through my childhood, years working towards, making sacrifices for, and here I was actually living it. Except that it did not feel good. To the outside world, I looked successful, and by most definitions of the time, I was successful, but I felt empty. And I vividly recall waking up in the middle of the night, more than once actually, with a very strange sensation in the middle of my body, that actually the middle of my body was missing. I could feel my legs, I could feel my chest, my shoulders, my head, but I had no stomach. It was like there was a great big piece of me missing. That feeling, I now know, was exactly that. A big piece of me was missing from that job. For all that I had wanted it and worked for it and was good at it, and that it impressed others and gave me many of the badges of success, a decent salary for my age, job security, the opportunity to make a difference in the world, meeting the movers and shakers of politics at the time, for all of that, I didn't feel fulfilled. I felt empty. And it was fortunate or synchronicitous that within 6 months of first having that feeling, that empty feeling in the tummy, that I learned about coaching and I started my own personal development journey and, of course, left that career for good. That was nearly 20 years ago, 18 years ago or so now. And ever since then, in one way or another, I've been on a mission of my own to love my work. Not only that, but I really believe that it's possible for you to love yours too. Not just the work itself, but work as a whole, work as part of your life. And it was that actually that drove me towards focusing on leadership. It was clear to me, and it still is, that no one in an organisation can really love their work if the leadership of the organisation sucks. When the culture suffocates people and their ideas, all that anyone operating in that culture can do is make the best of a bad lot. They can't really bring everything they have to offer or feel whole in their work if the organisation gets in the way all the time. And it's the leaders that create the culture that set the tone. And in the end, it requires the leaders to grow and change if the organisation's going to. The organisation can only be as developed as its leaders. And it's for that reason that I focused so much of my attention over the last 17, 18 years on leadership, because I think if we can get the leadership right, or at least I have thought if we can get the leadership right, then the people within the organisation have a better chance of loving their work. But now I believe that if people are really going to love work, if work is going to be an integrating, meaningful, fulfilling experience for individuals and a positive influence on the quality of the society we live in, it goes a lot deeper and a lot bigger than leadership and leadership development. I actually think that we need to rethink the nature of work overall. Because even the best, most inspirational, most enlightened business leaders who genuinely believe their organization can be a force for good in the world and value the contribution of the human beings in their business, even those people are constrained by some very powerful forces. And even they can start to feel suffocated by the system they operate within. Because I think it's bigger than any one individual, company's, organizational culture. It's the industrial age norms that underpin how we work and that have become more and more arduous and less conducive to getting results and less sustainable, where I think the problem lies. Just think about a typical day. Waking up with an alarm clock, maybe grabbing a bite of breakfast, although maybe not, a commute along with a lot of other people who are stuck in a traffic jam or on a train just like you, a desk, if you're lucky not to be hot desking and can't find a desk, a schedule of meetings that will disrupt your day in a major way and create more things to do or more tensions or result in a backhanded criticism of you or your team, needing to coordinate and check up on your team because you're being pressured for results and, like it or not, you need your team to deliver or it reflects on you, protecting your team from the system, which means that you're taking a hit for them occasionally, fighting fires most days, which means that your desire to sit back and think and imagine and create and get aligned and explore and grow yourself and get deeply into some topic that fascinates you is rescheduled for another day. Late meetings and overseas conference calls, the commute home, stuff to do at home, dinner, the laundry, painting the ceiling, whatever it is that you do when you get home. And if you're lucky, a few short hours with your family or your friends or just vegging out in front of the TV because you're all done in. And that doesn't include weekend and evening working, international travel, and even having work interrupt your holidays. It's no surprise that many people get to a point where they question whether the sacrifices they've made and have willingly made are actually worth it. And my answer is no. The sacrifices aren't worth it if you're feeling like this. And that's what brings me to the concepts that I want to share with you today. And the first is a concept that's going to be hugely important in this podcast. I'm going to talk about it a lot, so brace yourself, folks. The first concept I am calling unwork. You're going to hear a lot about unwork in the future, and I will define it over and over, I promise, especially as I get clearer about how far we can unwork our work. But the roots of the word lie in the educational concept of unschooling. The term unschooling was first coined by the author, and I think of him as like an educational anthropologist, a guy called John Holt, to mean learning and teaching that does not resemble school learning and school teaching. It's based on the premise that children are much better at learning than we give them credit for, and that they don't need a highly structured curriculum or even teaching, let alone a school with all the rules of school, in order to learn and become valuable members of society. In fact, all of that structure and systemic schooling makes it more difficult for them to learn. The concept of unschooling is about unpicking how we think about education and getting back to some pure principles. Basically, that children learn the most and develop in the most balanced, healthy way and become healthy, balanced adults when they have as much freedom to explore the world in their own way as we can bear to give them. Unschooled children often don't like their being educated at all, because they spend a lot of time doing things we don't associate with school. Playing, sleeping, gaming, hanging out, watching TV and YouTube. But their innate curiosity as children means they will explore, absorb, become fascinated by a whole range of aspects of life which provide them with everything they will need as adults. And in addition, Because they've been self-directing their learning, they have a deeper understanding of themselves and what makes them tick, what they're interested in, how to learn, and their value in society. Because they're not set apart in school for most of their formative years, they're educated in the world that they will later inhabit as adults, and that makes them more valuable adults. The role of parents in unschooling is to create an environment rich in learning opportunities, to be present for their children as partners and facilitators, and to, other than that, get out of the way of their children's learning. Now, there's a lot more to it, of course, and every unschooling family does it their own way. The philosophy goes far beyond education to the whole way of living, really. And because it's all about freedom, there are as many ways to unschool as there are children unschooling. It's entirely bespoke to the family and the way that works best for them. And if you heard my interview with Kerry MacDonald a few weeks ago, it was episode 53, you will have heard a little bit more about self-directed learning from a real expert. So if you're interested in this, definitely check her out, or you can Google more about John Holt. Pat Narikia is a really good person to follow as well. She has a podcast on unschooling. Sandra Dodd has written a great book about unschooling and has a great website as well. So if you're interested in unschooling, you can find out more about it. But I think we can apply the same lens to work. We can unpick how we think about work and get back to some pure principles. Basically, that we work because our society functions best when we all contribute to that society, when we all put in some way, sharing jobs that need to be done for us to survive and live good lives and full, enjoyable lives. Work, therefore, has meaning. It's for a purpose, and that feels good. It feels particularly good when the contribution we get to make meets a few criteria, something that I will come back to later in this show. And that, this basic principle about contribution, is where we need to start when we think about unworking. Unworking is about getting back to basic principles and then figuring out how to make that contribution to society in the most effective way, with as much freedom as possible and with as few barriers to making the contribution as possible. So just as unschooling may not look like education when you expect education to look like school, unworking may not look like work when you're used to work looking like a job. People may be unworking when they're reading a novel or going to the cinema in the middle of the day or chatting with colleagues over coffee or sorting out a problem with their kids or fixing up the garden or sleeping in or just staring at the ceiling, going to a conference, researching something seemingly off topic. Any of these things may be unworking because they are all, in one way or another, ways that we enhance our contribution to society. If we can get away from the idea that work only happens within the four walls of the office, or more importantly, that work only happens when it requires us to marginalise some other aspect of our life, we can really start constructing a way to work that's integrated with our lives and with ourselves. And I think that's really important because the very idea that work should feel so different to the rest of our lives is problematic to me. Why shouldn't work and the rest of your life almost be indistinguishable? Some of what you do in your life you'll get paid for and some of it you won't get paid for. And the proportion will be different for each person and how much they get paid for the bits that they get paid for will be different for each person. But there's no reason that the bits you don't get paid for have less value in terms of contribution to society than the bits you do get paid for. When you read a novel, for instance, you take the afternoon off and you decide you're going to read a novel. I mean, I really don't even like the idea of saying you take the afternoon off. When in the middle of the afternoon you decide to read a novel, you enhance the world. Not only do you fund creativity and make a job for an author, but you enhance your inner world. And you bring the joy of that reading of that novel to the rest of your life. When you go to the cinema, you not only support the film industry, and in my case, the popcorn industry in a big way, but you switch off your busy brain and you allow yourself to tap into other parts of your brain. So when you come out of the cinema, you're either rested or exhilarated or inspired, or you've been making connections between the movie and some aspect of your paid contribution to society. it doesn't really matter. It's all an enhancement. Unworking starts with the premise that people are much more motivated, passionate, dedicated, hardworking, and responsible than we give them credit for, and that actually the workplace and all the industrial age rules about how people need to work, how they need to be structured, all of that gets in the way of their innate desire to contribute and to do their best. In fact, the industrial age norms are so ingrained that we actually do not believe that most people have an innate desire to contribute. It's got that far. But I believe that work has actually made it very difficult for us to do our best work. So given that I believe that people have this innate desire to contribute and that we do our best as a society to suffocate it out of them very successfully in a lot of areas, I don't think that the result of unworking is that everyone becomes lazy and expects nothing but to go to the cinema and sleep in every day. I believe that when we truly can unwork, we will be more motivated to make our contribution, be able to put more of ourselves into that contribution, to find ways to contribute that really feed our soul, enhance our mental health, and solve many of the biggest issues in our world together. Things like climate change, disenfranchisement, inequality, poverty, maybe even war. So I want us to find a way to unwork because I think it will enhance our experience of life and actually change the world. But I also think that we have very little choice. The world's changing so fast that I believe work will be almost unrecognisable in 20 to 50 years. More technology is going to mean that there simply isn't enough work to go around if we stick with our conventional ideas about what work looks like. If it has to be a full-time job climbing the career ladder for life, I don't think we'll be able to provide enough of those jobs to enough people. So we'll have a choice of having massive poverty and unemployment, people not only costing the state billions every year, but people who are unable to meet that innate human desire to contribute. And that will lead to greater incidence of crime, even more mental illness, more disengagement, more poverty. I could go on. And I really hope that when we look back at how we work today in, say, 20 years, we will think, why on earth did we think that was okay? What madness! But we all did it. But for a peaceful revolution to happen rather than a very painful readjustment, once the unsustainability of the status quo becomes very stark, it requires some early adopters, people to lead the way, leaders, in other words, people who are willing to go first and start constructing an unworking life, an unworking community, even an unworking movement. Just as we've seen the massive growth in entrepreneurialism over the last few decades, with more and more people setting up their own businesses or joining smaller, groundbreaking companies or going freelance, I think that we will start seeing a growing unworking movement as more and more people strip away the constraints of the industrial age way of working and reinvent the flavour of work as part of life. Now, I said earlier that work feels particularly good for us when it meets a few criteria. So now that I've explained this concept of unwork, I want to go back to that now. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because I want to spend future episodes really getting under the skin of the five criteria that I'm going to share with you. But for unworking to stop being purely philosophical and have us all sitting around saying, oh yes, definitely, I totally agree, without any idea of where to start or what to look for, feels a little bit irresponsible. So if you can, if you're not actually driving at the moment or somewhere out of the way, I'd like you to grab a piece of paper and a pen and I'd like you to draw a five-pointed star, a pentagram. That's the kind of star that you can draw without taking your pen off the page. And I'd recommend you start drawing your star at the top so you don't end up with the symbol of the occult, which is when the star is the other way around. The pentagram, which is what you'll end up with, is a really powerful symbol in mythology and religion and perfect, actually, for what we're about to do with it. Now I'd like you to label the 5 points of the star with these five words. Passion, impact, need, integrated, and talent. Passion, impact, need, integrated, and talent. A few weeks ago in my interview with Ginny Bailey, I talked about a diamond with 4 points, and those 4 points representing the 4 criteria that make for meaningful work. But since then, I've evolved the model, and this is now it. It has 5 points, and it's a star. It may evolve again in future, but I've been using this way for a few months and with clients and actually with myself, and it's been very powerful. These 5 criteria are the basis of unworking. When you can give yourself a full 10 out of 10 in each of these 5 areas, when you can give yourself a full 10 out of 10 in each of these 5 areas, you're likely to feel that you found a way to contribute that's in alignment with you and your life. However, when you aren't able to give yourself a full 10 out of 10 for each of those areas, 1 of 2 things is going on. Now, the first thing that might be going on is fine, which is that you're working towards a 10. You're on the journey, you've made the changes, but you're still needing to tweak and adapt your behaviours and your thinking and your approach to get work to be just right, this kind of unworking perfection. So that's fine. But the second way that you may not be able to give yourself 10 out of 10 is that you're out of alignment with how you work in one or more area. And I call this disintegrated or disintegration. Your work and your life are not integrated in one or more fundamental ways, and change in one or more fundamental areas is required if you're going to become integrated and really get this sense of unwork. So let me just explain briefly what those 5 words, passion, impact, need, integrated, and talent, mean, so you can do a quick self-assessment. Let's start with passion. Passion is about how much you care about the thing you do. Does it matter to you? If you were really able to do it well, would you think that it really mattered? Now, you may feel that your work gives you a big sense of purpose, that it's a calling, or at least it would if it was working well for you. But it doesn't have to be as grand as that. You're just asking yourself whether you care about it. And I'd like you to give yourself a score out of 10 for how much you care. Let's go to talent next. So talent is about being good or skilled, or having the attributes to be good or skilled. Is the work you do a good fit for your talents? Does it make the most of the qualities that God gave you? Or do you find yourself working in an area that perhaps used to leverage your talents, but now maybe because you spend more and more of your time managing other people or doing politics, or the roles become so large, it incorporates a lot of areas that don't fit within your skill set. Now it doesn't sit within your innate talent zone. Now, if you have the attributes to be skilled, but you're on a learning curve, that's fine. Great. Fantastic. But if you don't feel like that, it's simply not a good fit for your attributes. You'll have to reflect that in your scores. So give yourself a score out of 10. I should say that 10 out of 10 is high, just in case anyone's wondering about that. Let's talk about need now. This point on the star is all about asking whether there's a need in the world for what you do. You can care about something and be really good at it, but there's no need for it in the world. Some people work in roles that used to add a lot of value, but new technology or new processes mean that those roles really aren't that valuable anymore. Or you've been so effective that you've done yourself out of a role. And this could be said about management. You've been so successful at creating a self-managing team that they really don't need you anymore. Or it could be that the product or service that you offer into the world doesn't have the value it used to. Someone else is doing it better, or we simply don't need it anymore. What score would you give yourself out of 10 for how much what you do is needed either in your organization or in the world? 4th is impact. What impact are you making? Are you making a difference? Because you can be working your butt off and have not very much to show for it. Every day people go to work and do this and come home and wonder what difference they've made in the world. Perhaps they impressed their manager, or they got a promotion, or they completed a project, but did that actually change anything? Are your efforts making the impact they're supposed to make? give yourself a score out of 10. And finally, the point on the star that you've labelled integrated. Now, all of the above could be a high score and things still don't feel right. And that might be related to this criteria. And this is the new criteria. This is the one that made it from a diamond into a star. How well does your work integrate with your life? That's how well does it integrate with your lifestyle and how well does it integrate with who you are at a core level? And this is often where the disconnect begins that results in people feeling that there's something not quite right. Yes, of course, you may lose your passion or realise that you never really cared that much about what you do, or you could realise there's not much need for it anymore, or that you aren't fulfilled because you care about it and there's a need, but you're not making much of a difference. You're not having the impact. Or your role isn't a good fit for your talents. You might realise any of those things. But when your work is disintegrated with who you are and with your lifestyle, the pain is intense. There are many reasons that work can become disintegrated. Normally, though, it's because of some kind of catalytic event or a period of catalytic change where your life changes in some way. So here are a few examples. You get a new boss or a new CEO into the organization and it suddenly feels very different to what it did and it's not what you signed up for. Or you're thinking of starting a family and you look at your work and you think that was fine when I didn't have kids, but it's not going to be fine when I do. Or you've got older kids who don't need you to be there as much, and so what worked for you well in your work before doesn't work so well now. Your partner's job may change and therefore your work may be out of sync with your lifestyle. Or your relationship status changes. You could be offered a new big role and you suddenly wonder whether this is really what you want. Your financial situation might change, meaning that you've got new choices or fewer choices. You're offered redundancy and you have to ask yourself whether you actually find redundancy quite appealing. And the chance to leap out is quite liberating. All of that might point to the fact that you're at something of a crossroads. A change outside of you within work or outside of work can either cause the ground to shift underneath you, meaning something new is important that wasn't important before, or can shine a light on the fact that the way you work hasn't been working for you for some time, or it can make something that was working, stop working. So the question is, in this criteria, how well does your work integrate with your life? Is there a tension between who you are and the work you do, or the way you want to work and the way you do work? Do you feel that you're making sacrifices, or that you've become unwilling or unable to make those sacrifices anymore? Even if all the other four criteria were high scoring, would something still not feel right if your goal is to unwork? To create a life where work and not work are hard to distinguish, both being a true fit to you and your lifestyle. Give yourself a score. Now, if you've done the Wheel of Life before, you'll know what happens next. You'll start to see some low scores and some high scores, and that should help you to know where to look. If you have one or more low scores, and that could be low for you, so low for you might be an 8 or it might be a 2, it's just down to you and what feels low to you. If you have one or more low scores, you might well be feeling that something is out of sync. I should point out that a lot of people tolerate this for their whole career. Their work does not integrate, or they do not feel passionate about it, or they're working their asses off, but they're not making a difference, and they just carry on with that. And you can too. Or you may feel that this is something of a crossroads for you. Now, you can accept the scores you have and you can carry on, or you may feel that you're ready for a change. You might feel right now that you could do better, and I believe that you could. Over the next few weeks, I will share with you some more depth about this model, what I'm learning about unworking myself, and give you more ideas about what to do next. But meanwhile, I'd love to hear from you about your scores and what came up for you when you did this exercise. I'm wide open to feedback about it because it is brand new. I've only used it on myself and a few of my clients, so I'd love to get a bit of feedback. with what worked well for you and what didn't, if there was anything. With information about how to do that, how to stay in touch with us, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
We'd love to hear from you. You can stay in touch with us on Instagram at Punks in Suits and on our Punks in Suits Facebook page. You can also sign up to our newsletter at www.thatpeoplething.com. I'll say it again. www.thatpeoplething.com. You can also find out more about working with Mummy as a speaker or as a coach on that website too. And please leave a comment and a star rating on iTunes. Please 5 stars before it's 5. Go ahead and do that now, as it helps other people find this podcast so that they can reveal more of the punk underneath their